Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Gies, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
Hey, happy hump day, everybody. Welcome to the Voice of Indie podcast, episode number 41. I am your host, as usual, Beam Weeks, and with me is Mr. Stephen Gies. How you doing tonight, Stephen?
I'm doing all right, I guess. It was kind of a crazy day. I had a doctor's appointment in Huntsville, and I got to Huntsville and then needed to fill up with gas because I didn't have enough gas to get home, and every gas station I went to was closed. I went to 15 wow. gas stations over the course of an hour and finally started heading home and figured, okay, let's see if I can make it. And then I found a Walmart halfway home that had gas. So I managed to get a little bit of gas there. But, boy, if you're traveling the next couple of days and you're in the southeast until they get their supplies going, I'm hearing that they're gouging in Tennessee. It's up over $5 a gallon around the Nashville area.
Yeah, plan ahead. If it's not necessary, I guess, stay home unless you have the gas. Maybe somebody's got a full tank of gas out there.
Yeah, definitely. I want to mention to everybody out there that in case you're not familiar with it, today is the first day that you can apply for internet subsidies through the EBBP, which is the Emergency Broadband Benefit Program. That's where the stimulus package had $4.2 billion set aside to incentivize rural companies to expand their broadband internet offerings. And in order to do that, they're offering people who earn less than $99,000 a year for a single person or $198,000 for a couple, $50 a month credit towards their internet bill each month until the $4.2 billion runs out. That way, if your service provider wants to get those $50 subsidies to help people pay for the internet, they have to expand their broadband into the areas where they're not currently offering it. So it's kind of a carrot approach to try to get that infrastructure expanded. But the good thing is, if you're under that couple hundred thousand dollar a year mark, you can get $50 a year. It only takes about 5 minutes to apply. That's the Emergency Broadband Benefit Program. And if you Google that, the applications are live right now.
All right. Well, there you go. Okay. So archive. If you miss an episode, we're on every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern time. If you miss an episode, we can be found in several places. Give us four places, Stephen.
The obvious one is at freshinkgroup.com. We have a tab called Podcast, and believe it or not, there's podcasts under that tab. All of the podcasts. You can catch all of our old shows there. You can also go to YouTube and search for the Fresh Ink Group channel. And by the way, while you're there, please subscribe, and don't forget to hit that like button every time you see a video you like. But we've got all of our podcasts there, plus we've got all of our book trailers and some interviews and some other odds and ends in there as well. Plus, each of your two hosts has an author website, and each of those has a podcast tab where we're putting all these podcasts. That's beamweeks.com and stephengies.com. And where else?
We can also be found at Spotify. Just go over to Spotify. It doesn't matter if you have a paid account or a free account. Just type in Voice of Indie, all one word, and every episode we've ever done on this program will be in there. And you can re-listen to your favorite episodes, discover ones that you might have missed. Hey, they're all there. So tune into them and check them out. There's some really cool stuff there, too. So, and you can follow us if you have Spotify. If you're on Spotify, also follow us on Spotify. You can follow us and really help us out. So remember
spread
to use
the word.
That as well. Yeah.
Now, I want to thank everybody who helped out with my giveaway over the last 5 days. Ending last night, I gave away the first book in my Jeez Writer How-To series called Narrative. It's about 48 pages, I think, long, a how-to on how to write narratives, especially if you're doing fiction and writing books, things like that. And it was a little bit of an experiment. I wanted to give it away for 5 days just to see if I could drive the numbers up and see what kind of results I got. And when I looked last time yesterday, it had risen to number 2 in all three of the categories that Amazon had it ranked in. Now, I need to go in and check the analytics through my Author Central page at Amazon and see if it ever hit number 1 or not. I hope it did. You get as far as number 2. Hey, we're number 2, you know. It's nice to say number 1. But at any rate, it was a good experiment, and it showed me that, you know, if you goose the sales a little bit like that, you can get some attention for your books, and hopefully I'll get some reviews out of it too. So, again, I want to thank everybody who participated in that, went over there and grabbed a free copy and helped me run those numbers up.
Yeah, and number 2, that's pretty good. I mean, that puts you in the bestsellers rank. And I can vouch for these books, the Jeez Writer How-To. You know, if you're a up-and-coming writer or you're a little rusty or you're new or whatever, I mean, these books come in really handy. The way Stephen teaches, I mean, he lays it out. It's simple. It's easy to understand. And I guarantee you will become a better writer through these. So definitely go over there. And even though they're not free all the time, they're still only like 99 cents or $1.99. So go over there and check them out. And he's got a whole bunch of different categories, too. It's not just the narrative. There are several others. And they're worth your time.
Thank you for that endorsement. Now, listeners, we'd like to hear from you during the show today, and we've got a little roll-in now to tell you how to do that, Dean.
Call 516-453-9902 right now with your questions or comments for tonight's guest, or post a note on Twitter with hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the body of the tweet, and we'll read it on air. That's 516-453-9902 or hashtag Fresh Ink Group on Twitter.
Call now. All right. You can be the winner. K-Rock 105. All right.
It's been a good week for book sales. I just a couple hours ago when I got home, I saw some numbers pass by in front of me. And Mary Schmidt's book, When Angels Fly, is one of our best-selling print books this week. I can't quite remember which author names she uses because she uses a bunch of different ones, but I believe this one's under S. Jackson. Does that sound right, Dean? When Angels Fly?
I think so, yeah.
But at any rate, if you go to the Fresh Ink Group website, you can find it there under our fake books, When Angels Fly. Dr. Helen Burrell's American Agony is still one of our best sellers. B.A. Johnson's new release, Sassy Discovers the AME Church, is going like gangbusters. She's had some very successful events. She's getting write-ups in newspapers and newsletters and getting a lot of attention for that book, which is helping a lot. Another one of our best sellers this week was Mark Herndon's memoir, The High Road. And Mark Herndon was for almost 30 years the drummer for the supergroup Alabama with 30-something number one hits. And happy birthday to Mark. Yesterday was his birthday. And then, of course, we've got two more books that are bestsellers this week, and they are both Mac McDowell Mission series by today's guest, Robert G. Willis-Croft. So that's a good little segue into who is this guy, Bean? Why don't you tell us who this Willis-Croft seller is?
Okay, well, Robert G. Willis-Croft is a retired submarine officer, deep sea and saturation diver, scientist, author of numerous books and hundreds of articles, and a lifelong adventurer. He spent 22 months underwater, a year in the equatorial Pacific, 3 years in the Arctic ice pack, and a year at the geographic South Pole. He holds degrees in marine physics and meteorology and a doctorate for developing a system to protect scuba divers in contaminated water. Dr. Willis-Croft decorated service. Hold on here. Dr. Willis-Croft's decorated service includes 23 years in the U.S. Navy and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, directing diving operations throughout the Pacific and the Atlantic. Besides penning novels and nonfiction books. He also writes extensively in other forums, including articles on terrorism-related topics. Since becoming a Fresh Ink Group member author, he has launched 2 series and is planning more exciting projects. Robert G. Wilkescroft lives in Centennial, Colorado with his family. And with that, welcome to the show, Robert.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Hey, Robert.
So anything else you want to add to that?
Well, it looks like you kind of covered it pretty well, maybe with a little bit of exaggeration, but every author likes that.
Yeah. Now, listeners probably recognize that we had Robert on as one of our first guests when we started these podcasts, 8-9 months ago, something like that. And we've invited him back this week because he has a new audiobook that's out for sale right now, and he's got a new novel that's going to be out in the next couple of weeks. So we're going to talk about that when we get to talking about his individual books and projects. But in the meantime, Robert, why don't you remind our listeners a little bit about where you come from and, your family and your personal life. What do you like to do with yourself?
Well, I started off as a youngster in Montana. My parents had been in Poland before World War II. They escaped by the skin of their teeth as they were there as missionaries, and they went to Montana as a remote part of the United States, and that's where I was born. In 1950, we all went back to Europe, bombed out, very few places to live, ended up with a home in Basel, Switzerland. Dad was gone most of the time in war-torn Germany. And eventually, I went to school there, graduated from high school there, and finally came back to the States and launched out on my own, and rather quickly ended up in the submarine service. I was an enlisted guy. For your listeners who are familiar with Hunt for Red October, you may remember the sonar tech Jonesy. He was a black, very, very smart, sharp sonar technician who played a significant role in the movie. Well, except for my facial features, I was Jonesy as a young enlisted guy. I got lucky and was selected for a commissioning program, went to University of Washington, where I got my degrees in oceanography and meteorology, and then went back to submarine as a commissioned officer. Ultimately, I ended up in the Man in the Sea program, where I was involved with deep diving submarine espionage, which is the subject of the first book in the Mac McDowell series, Operation Ivy Bells. Took a group of saturation divers. We went down in a submarine, the USS Halibut, to the bottom of the Sea of Okhotsk between Kamchatka Peninsula and northern Siberia, locked out of the submarine on the ocean bottom and tapped into Soviet underwater communications cables. That was, by any measure, my adventure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ready. Soviets in the area at the time, or were you guys just all stealth?
Oh, there were a couple of cruisers that had a sense that we might be there, and they were constantly looking for us. There was an old Russian whiskey diesel submarine with an extremely canny skipper who seemed to be able to get into our heads. Even though he didn't have the underwater capability we did as a nuclear submarine, he made life pretty difficult for us. So, and the story is told in detail in Operation Ivy Bells, which, as you guys well know, is available in all formats, including audio. I transferred over to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, got involved with their diving programs in the Atlantic and the Pacific, spent time down on the equator studying manganese nodules and whether or not they would be feasible for mining from the ocean floor, spent several years up in the Arctic ice pack doing research, laying biologic baselines, and then spent a year at the Geographic South Pole doing atmospheric research.
Tapping into the phone lines underwater, were the Soviets, the Russians, did they ever catch on?
Well, what happened is, no, they didn't catch on. We had a trader named Pelton, a senior petty officer in the Navy, who was deeply in debt, and decided that he could, he had a lot of knowledge about this program and decided that if he tipped off the Soviets, they might pay him some money. He ended up getting $35,000, which is hardly anything at all compared to the value of it. But he tipped them off, and they ended up dragging the bottom, and they found the pod that we had placed on the underwater communications cable. And, in fact, that pod, even today, sits in the Moscow Maritime Museum.
Wow.
And I assume this fellow is in the brig somewhere?
That's my question.
Yeah. I frankly don't know if he's still alive, but if he's alive, he's in the brig.
Yeah. Well, listeners know that we like to interrupt our guests and play commercials. This week, we've got four commercials all about Robert Willis Cross' books. So let's get started with the first one, the Star Child Trilogy, and then we'll ask Robert about that three-book series.
Now, the Star Child Trilogy by Robert G. Willis Croft is complete. In Book 1, Slingshot, three scientist engineers reach for the stars as they blend their skills with a host of skilled colleagues to create the world's first space launch loop. A team of young eco-terrorists will go to any length to halt the project. One woman is determined to scoop the story, reporting events to a watching world. Slingshot ranges from Seattle's financial district to the ocean bottom off Baker Island to the edge of space and across the vast panorama of an equatorial Pacific. It's a love story, a gender bender, and a mystery about a missing aviatrix, a conspiracy, and a true believer. It's about high finance, intrigue, heroism, fanaticism, betrayal, and humanity's surge into outer space. In Book 2, The Star Child Compact, an international team ventures to Saturn's moon Iapetus to verify it really is a derelict starship. They discover the founders, descendants of the starship's builders, who arrived in our solar system 150,000 years ago. Together with the founders, the explorers advance founder science with momentous implications for the entire solar system, paving the way for a joint push to the distant reaches of the galaxy. But a Persian caliphate stowaway sabotages the mission, hoping to destroy science that he believes violates Islam. The Star Child Compact blends tomorrow's science with human foibles, fears, beliefs, and political intrigue, speculating on how civilization might develop while traveling on a generational starship, and how modern humans might interact with remnants of that civilization. In Book 3, the Iapetus Federation, besieged Israelis on Earth make their way to Mars as the Federation expands throughout the solar system. While global jihad rages on Earth, putting millions to the sword, the Star Child Institute develops wormhole transportation. But will this new technology be ready in time to rescue all that is left of the United States, the beleaguered Lone Star Conservancy, and remnants of other cultures around the globe? From hand-to-hand combat in the oceans, to battles on Earth's surface, to struggles in interplanetary space, our heroes fight to survive and expand to the far reaches of the universe. Robert G. Willis Croft is an adventurer, polar explorer, deep sea diver, nuclear submariner, scientist, and best-selling, award-winning author. His stories portray the accurate science and precise engineering that appeals to hard science fiction buffs. But the Star Child Trilogy is for everyone who loves an epic tale, a grand journey by men and women who loom larger than life as they work, play, and love. Make the Star Child Trilogy your own with individual hardcover, softcover, audiobook, and all major ebook editions worldwide, or collect the entire set for one epic journey by Robert G. Willis Croft, the Star Child Trilogy.
Get over and get your copies today. That sounds exciting. Action-packed. Okay, so we do have a caller. Do you guys want to take a call?
Go for it.
All righty. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show. What's your name and where are you calling from? Hello, caller. Area code 708. That is you. Going once, going twice.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi. What's your name and where are you calling from?
I don't know. I'm on the phone. I'm Pat Guthrie.
Hi, Patricia.
I didn't know how
this
thing works with the phone. I'm doing good. Thank you. How about yourselves?
Doing well.
This man is fascinating. He's a marine biologist, and he's been through all kinds of espionage stuff. I don't really have a prepared speech here, but I'm dying to read his books. So
that's what we like to hear.
Got a reader. Very interesting.
What did you say
it does
your
remind
name
me a lot of Clancy.
This is Pat Guthrie, Robert.
Hey, Pat, let me make
a quick comment
to you.
Hi,
believe it or not, people paid me to do all that stuff. You know, they didn't know I would have paid them to do it.
Yeah.
Good. Well, that's cool enough.
All right.
Hey, did you ever have any interaction with sharks? I know wasn't really your thing, but.
Well, you know something? Sharks are very interesting. What they are is probably the most efficient eating machine nature ever invented. I can tell you a very short anecdote. We were down almost on the equator. We had just put a special buoy in the water that was to measure near ocean surface oceanographic and meteorologic conditions, and something went wrong with it, and it wasn't working. It had a cable going down to the bottom about 5 kilometers down with a couple of railroad wheels attached to the cable to keep it in place. And it was going to take a couple of days to pull it back to the surface. And so I suggested to the skipper that I go out there with one of the other divers, and we dive down and we cut the cable and just abandon the cable and get the buoy back. And so we did that. We got in a Zodiac, a rubber boat. We headed across. It was about a half a mile away from the ship. And as we moved towards the buoy, from all directions, hundreds of shark fins started cutting through the water. I looked at the diver who was with me. He was a bit younger and not as experienced. And I said, you know, nobody's going to think ill of you if you want to turn back. And he said, are you going back? And I says, well, we got a job to do. He says, okay, I'll do it with you. At that point, one shark, I think he was a young one because an older shark is too smart, he kept bumping his nose into the rubber pontoon of the Zodiac. And if he'd opened his mouth when he did it, he'd have popped it, and we'd have been in the water with these guys. Well, in any case, we got over to the buoy, and we got in the water back to back. He had a bang stick. This is a sort of a spear with an explosive CO2 charge at the end. We dropped down to 100 feet, and I had this very sharp, brand-new bread-cutting knife that the ship's cook had given me. I reached out and cut the Kevlar cable, and it zipped down, and we got up inside the cage. The sharks came back, but they left us alone, and we ended up getting in the Zodiac and getting back to the ship. So there's a short story of what can happen in the water with sharks.
No kidding. I bet Mama gave him an earful. Oh, dear. That's fascinating. I'm fascinated with sharks. Don't get me in the water with them. I don't even like being in the water, but I'm fascinated to watch them.
Yeah.
Jaws is kind of silly. You know, in the book that's coming out here shortly, Operation Arctic Sting, there's a situation there where a shark becomes very interested in the divers, and an orca, a killer whale, comes in and eats the shark and saves the divers.
Yeah, they're all right. Willing to do that, aren't they? They're really rather friendly to people. Maybe not to others of their species, but anyway.
Well, thank you for calling in, Pat. We appreciate that. Appreciate you taking time to join the program.
Oh, you're welcome. Oh, anytime. I've been on the last couple of times, but not calling in.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much for calling.
Fascinating. I'm going to read his book.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Pat.
Take care.
Yeah, okay. As a recreational diver, I had a few dozen times when I had shark encounters, including doing diving Shark Alley in the Bahamas, where you go down there and there's hundreds of sharks. My experience has always been that they're curious about you, but fairly indifferent. That Jaws image that, you know, as soon as the shark knows the human's around, it's all attack. I've never really seen that to be the case, but you never know what's in a shark's mind. You just never know.
Yeah, Jaws is exaggerated because it's fiction. We do have a couple of comments on Twitter, so I'm going to hit these. Verwayne Greenhouse said, I got you on Spotify. Like, all right, cool. Thank you, Verwayne.
Thanks,
Verwayne. And Dr. Helen Burrell says, wow, talking about Dr. Willicroft here. She says, wow, what a guy and a deep sea expert and a scientist and a writer of both fiction and nonfiction. Prolific, thy name is, Dr. Willicroft. I've got to read some of this writer's books. All right. So you're winning new readers over by the sounds of it. Okay. So now in the bio in introducing you, I mentioned here some awards that you've won. What are some of these awards that you've won for your writing?
Well, I've won the let me see. The names are often a little bit interesting. I'm blanking out here. I'll answer that in just a bit. Okay, I'll answer that in just a bit. I'll pull it up.
Well, how about the bullshit award? I see you got the bullshit award. I got that listed here.
Yeah, I actually did win that from the Washington State Scuba Diving Council. We had a big convention. And there was a contest to see who could tell a story for 15 minutes, no more and no less, and make it very interesting, and it couldn't be true. And I had a lot of fun with that one, and I ended up convincing everybody it was a true story, but it was total BS. And the award I got looked like one of those golfer trophies, except instead of a golf club, it was a bull.
All right.
Well, while you pull that up, why don't we go ahead and move on to the next commercial, which is the Daedalus Files, and then we'll talk about that series as well.
Okay.
In Daedalus, Navy SEAL Derek Tiger Bailey, irreverent member of the SEAL's Winged Insertion Command, makes a harrowing first base jump in the experimental Griffin 7 hard-shell wingsuit from the edge of space. He test flies the armor-plated Griffin 10 in Daedalus LEO, catapulting into space by slingshot and dropping from a record-obliterating 160 clicks. Testing the enhanced Griffin 10 MK4 in Daedalus Squad, Bailey's six-man team believes it is fully prepared for hurtling around the world and staging critical re-entry, but challenged to innovate life-or-death solutions with only seconds to spare. It might not survive intact. Then the presidential frontrunner is seized by pirates for ransom in Daedalus combat, and the SWIC team is called to action where it must literally improvise on the fly with everything to lose. Join Tiger Bailey through all four adventures in sci-fi master Robert G. Willicroft's Daedalus series, now collected for the first time as the Daedalus Files, SEAL's Winged Insertion Command, SWIC.
Yeah, I agree with Dr. Helen Burrell when she says you're prolific, quite prolific. I mean, you've got a couple of different series going on here. You've got the trilogy. So how does your experiences, how do you incorporate those into your writing?
Well, let me give you an example with the Daedalus Files. I do a lot of reading, as I think every author should be doing. And I came across, one of the things that I'm interested in is wingsuits, which is a form of very high adventure, diving from high aircraft, not with parachutes, but with special wingsuits that have fabric between the arms and the legs so that you kind of fly. And then when you're about, maybe 100 meters or so above ground, you pop your chute and drop to the earth. And I came across a German consortium that had built a hard shell wingsuit that was rocket assisted, and it's pretty expensive, typical sport enthusiast couldn't do it. But I got to thinking about it and what kind of a potential it had. I had written the Star Child trilogy, and in particular Slingshot, the first book, which is about the building of the world's first space launch loop. And there are two towers called Sky Towers that are suspended about 80 kilometers above the Earth's surface. And what I do in this series is have the Navy SEALs take over the project and develop it for eventually being able to drop from low Earth orbit in formation into a battle scene. So the it's really four stories. The first one is the development of the wingsuit, the Griffon, it's called. And then the second one is doing it from low Earth orbit. The third one is a whole squad doing it from low Earth orbit. And then the fourth story of the series is actually dropping from low Earth orbit into a real combat situation to rescue an American presidential candidate. So my reading, my own personal experience comes into play in creating the canvas backdrop against which the stories play themselves out.
Well, how realistic is your depiction of these wingsuits? Is this technology expanding and developing and becoming more and more practical, and you expect to start seeing this as a combat thing in the future?
I think that it's very realistic. Since the books came out, I have come across a couple of videos of not the Navy SEALs, but the Air Force testing them out from very high altitude. So it seems to be progressing. Maybe not as fast as I had it progress in my book, but nevertheless, it seems to be happening. I see it as a real eventuality.
Back in my early days, I'd have been trying to sign up, see if I could get out there and try that kind of stuff. I'm kind of old and broke down now, so I think those days of jumping out of high altitudes are behind me, but it sure sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah. You're not too old, Stephen. Come on, man. You don't give yourself enough credit.
Yeah. While I was editing these books, I went over and was watching some of these videos on YouTube, and there's different kinds of devices, too. Like, they've got ones with like a giant fan, kind of like an ultralight airplane, but a suit version of it, too. And people are flying around with those, and, man, they just look dangerous to me. And our author, Jeannie Sharp, her husband was using one of those and wound up crashing to the earth and being hospitalized for an extended period of time from his injury. So, yeah, a little bit scary for me, but that's the kind of stuff the military needs to be developing, because you never know when you might need something. And it's great to see it spark your imagination, Robert. Do you think you'll write any more about the Daedalus and the wingsuits and whatnot, or is this wrapped up?
I don't know. You know, if I get the inspiration, I'll probably carry it further. Say, you guys were asking about the awards. I've got the information here. Let me lay it on you a little bit.
All right.
The National Association of Book Entrepreneurs has an award called the Pinnacle Book Achievement Award, and several of my books have received that award in the categories of science fiction and the categories of adventure. I'm particularly proud of those because there's a lot of competition, and to win out on that competition says that the judges really thought something of it. I've also won the Shelf Unbound Award as a notable indie book.
I'm familiar with that award.
Pardon?
I said I'm familiar with that award, Shelf Unbound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then there's the Selfie Selection, which is from the Library Journal. There's the Top Shelf. I received the finalist award in Top Shelf, and then I actually won the award for an adventure book at the Top Shelf Award as well. And right now, I'm still awaiting, but I am a finalist in the Colorado Authors League competition for adventure books. Operation Icebreaker that's being looked at. So I'm one of three finalists in that.
All right. We do have another caller, so how about we go to the phones again? Hello, caller. What's your name and where are you calling from?
This is Ellen, and I'm calling from Denver. And
hi, Ellen. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Robert probably doesn't remember me, but I met him at Mile High Con a couple years ago and have been a fan of his science fiction books. The military Navy book is not a genre I ever thought I would be interested in, but I have found them fascinating. You mentioned the orca and the sharks, and I was wondering what other animals you've had face-to-face experiences with underwater.
Well,
good question.
The most interesting was the orca. I've swum with orcas quite a bit, underwater and on the surface. They're playful. They're like puppies. They're like really smart puppies. A lot of fun to be with, and they're incredibly gentle, despite the fact that they're 10,000 pounds of whale. I've also swum with belugas and narwhals, sharks. Down in the Florida Keys, I swum with turtles.
Have you done stingrays? Like a lot of people go to Stingray City in the Cayman Islands. Have you ever been with a big pot of stingrays?
Yeah, there were. I'm sorry, you got garbled there. Say that again.
I was asking if you've had any stingray encounters. You know, like a lot of recreational divers go to the Cayman Islands and go to Stingray City and feed the giant stingrays.
Yeah, I have swum with stingrays. I haven't had a real personal experience with stingrays like I've had with orcas. I swum with penguins, seals, sea lions.
You don't have any penguins in your book yet at this point, do you?
No, no penguins yet, but the next one, the next Mac McDowell mission will be titled Whiteout. It takes place around Antarctica, and there's going to be some penguins there.
Question, I heard you listing various awards. Weren't you nominated for a science fiction award?
Yeah, I was nominated for the Nebula Award for the Iapetus Federation. Didn't get beyond the nomination, but it was cool to get the nomination.
That's book three of the Star Child trilogy.
Right.
Well, thank you. It's great to be able to talk to you, and I've really enjoyed your books. I did hear a rumor that some of the sound effects are going to include things like the orca.
Yeah.
Yeah. All kinds
of
cool stuff.
Well, I look forward to hearing that. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for calling in. All right.
Yeah, when we work on Mac McDowell mission audiobooks, we have to be very, very serious about all the various kinds of submarine sounds and the animal sounds. And wait a minute, this one's narwhals. And is that supposed to be an orca? So that we get all those sound effects right and sound authentic. Because we really don't want to start getting nasty letters from orcas who are out there buying these audiobooks and saying, man, you said the orca swam up and then you had a narwhal sound. What are you people doing?
we do have another caller. You want to take another one?
Great.
All right. They're all calling in. Hello, caller. You are on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hello?
Yeah, hello. Turn your listening device down so you're just listening on the phone. All right.
Hello.
Oh, he just dropped off.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Well, hopefully he'll call back.
Yeah, call back, and we'll put you right on. Just make sure you have your listening device in the background off because there's a little bit of a delay and it's an echo and it'll throw you off.
Yeah, callers,
so,
when you call in, you can listen to the show through your phone. So it's not like you have to miss out on what's happening.
As soon as you call in and you're on hold, you'll be able to hear on the phone.
Okay, while we wait for him to call back, why don't we jump to the next commercial? Because we're chewing up our time here fairly quickly. Robert has so many things to talk about. It's fascinating. This one is the Orc Chronicles.
Icicle. Okay. Icicle. Here we go.
Now, introducing book one in the new series by master sci-fi storyteller Robert G. Williscroft, Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, The First Oort Chronicle. Dying of prostate cancer, wealthy entrepreneur Braxton Thorpe is frozen in hopes of someday being revived and cured. That's when he discovers a threat to the entire solar system. But he has a problem. He's dead. He awakens to find himself uploaded into an electronic matrix. Exploring beyond the matrix and the larger global net, he discovers the Oort, a distributed electronic entity older than humanity, with an unnerving secret. Aliens wiped out nearly all life on Earth once, and they're coming back to do it again. The mathematical entity that is Thorpe has to find a way to convince humans of this threat, and in time to do something about it. But how? And what? Will Thorpe's carefully assembled team have any shot at saving the world? Will the Russians and Chinese help or betray? And who uploaded the cat? Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, The First Oort Chronicle, is available worldwide in hardcover, softcover, all ebook formats, and now as an audiobook narrated by Trenton Bennett, including music and sound effects. Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group.
Cool sound effects. All right, we do have the caller back. Go ahead.
That book just won one of the awards Robert was talking about, the NABE Pinnacle Book Achievement Award.
All right. All right, let's go ahead and get this caller here. Hello, caller. You are on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hey. Your mystery caller is back. I'm John Roseman, a writer friend of the author. How you doing?
Hi.
How you doing, Robert?
Hey, I know Professor Roseman. Nice to hear you.
It's good to be heard, and I'm glad I'm listening with fascination to the discussion. Good questions and good answers. I don't recall if you said you've swum with a penguin yet, but that changes my view of you a little bit. Listen, I have a question or two regarding the wingsuit or griffin and any other scientific extrapolation you've come up with. Have you sent any information of this to the Air Force or perhaps the Navy to get feedback? And have you had to seek permission for any of your fiction, since
good
it does
question.
Deal with well, real life experiences?
Let me address the second question first. Because of the classified nature of what I was involved with during the Cold War, Operation Ivy Bells and some other things, I was not able to write about those until years later, when they were, for the most part, declassified. If I had tried to write about them, I would have had to submit the manuscript, and it would have come back mostly black. It wouldn't have been readable. So I just held off.
Heavily redacted.
You betcha. But once what I finally did was to take the various people with whom I worked, and I sort of blended their personalities and came up with a new set of people. Anybody who was with me will recognize himself, but he will be in two or three of the guys. That's how I did that without violating the security problems.
So you haven't been sued yet.
As for the second question, I have not submitted ideas primarily because that's a hugely involved process if you're not in academia. What I did note, though, and I don't know whether you heard it a little bit earlier, it looks like the Air Force has picked up with the Griffon idea. I don't know whether they're working with the German consortium or not, but they're developing it.
Interesting. Interesting. They could still benefit by reading your some of your novels.
I would think so. Yeah, of course, we all – let me add a little thing here. Professor Rosenman, he's retired from the Norfolk State University, and among other things, he taught the writing of science fiction. So we're talking with somebody here who knows what he's talking about. He has written a superb series. It's called the Inspector of the Cross series, and it's just a remarkable bit of hard science fiction. The latest one, Crash, just came out, I guess, in the last two or three months. Remarkable book. Well worth looking at.
Wow, thank you so much. I didn't expect to get some promotion in return, but I appreciate it.
Hey, we're here to promote everybody.
Of course. I appreciate it.
All right,
thanks
for calling in.
It's my pleasure.
Yeah. Good to hear from you, John.
Good night.
Nice talking
to you. Bye-bye. Take care.
So, Robert, we just heard the commercial for Icicle, the first book in the Orc Chronicle series. What's the status of that series?
Well, the second book, which is titled Foundation to the Stars, is halfway through the writing. So I expect to see it completed in the next couple of months or so, ready for some heavy-duty editing, and then you guys will get it.
We look forward to it.
And the third book, which is tentatively entitled Andromeda, A Rising Tide, with a sense of a rising tide lifts all ships, is in the outline stage.
Now,
let me jump in really quickly to add one thing there. Just recently, the last week or so, I read about a new development in cosmology. It appears that the multiverse concept has received some possibly verifiable new data, but it looks like when two multiverses come into contact with each other in whatever this super universe is in which the various multiverses are contained, they form a cold spot. And the cold spot is congruent for both of the multiverses, which kind of like a black hole in our universe can get us from here to there because of two spots that are actually congruent. It looks like one might be able to traverse from one multiverse to another, and so I'm playing around with that idea to incorporate it into the third book of the Orc Chronicles.
Okay, that's pretty interesting. I'm jumping here with my question before it gets too far away from it, and you're saying it's in the outlining stage. How long does it take you from outlining to a finished product, finished book?
Oh, my. It typically takes a month or so to get the outline fully laid out, and then it's just a matter of writing every day. If the more writing I get done, the more quickly the book gets done, but it's certainly several months up to a year. I would say 6 months to a year, depending on what other things I get involved with.
Okay, now second question. This multiverse, is there a layman's way to explain this, a dummy's way to explain what this multiverse is all about?
Sure. You're sitting at a table, and you're eating dinner, and you pick up your knife and fork to cut a steak, and you drop the fork, and that leads to a series of events at the dinner table. But if you hadn't dropped the fork, it would have led to an entirely different series of events. And what the concept of a multiverse says is that both of those things happened.
Okay.
And so the universe splits out into two universes. But because you have a continuous process of things constantly going one way or the other all the time, everywhere, you have an infinity of universes that are constantly splitting off into what are called multiverses.
Interesting. Yeah, see, we're getting
it
highbrow
your mind
on
when you really try to think about it.
Yeah.
Okay, listeners, that's the Oort Chronicle series, O-O-R-T, and the first book, Icicle, is already out in all the various editions, including the audiobook. And the second one, The Federation, is on its way, hopefully in a few months, the Oort Federation. So, Beam, you want to go on and get to our last commercial here, the Mac McDowell Mission Series?
Sure thing. Here we go.
Now, from Fresh Ink Group and best-selling author Robert G. Williscroft, the Mac McDowell Mission Series. With a security clearance above top secret, Saturation Dive Team Officer in Charge Mac McDowell leads his team into critical Cold War counter-Soviet missions. Watch Mac prove what brave men can achieve under real pressure, the kind that will steal your air and crush the life out of you. In Operation Ivy Bells, it's the summer of 1972 when Mac and his off-the-books Deepwater Espionage Group are conducting a daring undersea wiretapping operation to gather Russian intel and avert world war. Join nuclear submariner Mac McDowell for extreme diving, a battle with giant squid, and more as he risks everything in the most dangerous operation yet. In Operation Icebreaker, Mac McDowell is leading his submarine team for a mission to lay SOSUS arrays under the Arctic ice when they clash with a highly automated Alpha-class Soviet submarine. Overwhelmed by mechanical problems, the Soviet crew abandons their sub near Point Barrow, Alaska. The skipper launches DSRV-1 Mystic so Mac and his crew can board the empty sub and gather intelligence. The arrival of an even more advanced Soviet sub leads to breathtaking underwater clashes with the specter of war looming. Will Mac and his crew be sunk by the Soviets? Or will they safely return to Alaska, where Mac's new love, Kate, anxiously waits? The McDowell Mission Series by Robert G. Williscroft is available worldwide in jacketed hardcovers, paperbacks, ebooks from Kindle to Nook and Kobo and more, plus exclusive audiobook editions. The Mac McDowell Mission Series is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group. Take a deep breath and dive in for thrilling submarine adventures in every Mac McDowell mission.
All right. So all of those books that we've highlighted tonight are available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble and anywhere else online where you buy your books.
Yeah, Pat Guthrie, we had hoped to play a brief sample of that Operation Icebreaker audiobook, too. We had a little clip with lots of animal sound effects in it, but it didn't want to upload right before the show for some reason. So maybe we'll play that in the next couple of weeks sometime as a commercial instead.
Yeah, that's an idea, because they're really cool to listen to, and they're a lot of fun to put together.
Yeah, and they even have sounds like Aouga. So Robert, what's going on with that series? We just heard a commercial talking about the first two books.
Well, you guys have the manuscript, and you just today sent me what we're hoping will be the final proof for Operation Arctic Sting, which is a direct continuation of Operation Icebreaker, where Mac and his team end up boarding that Soviet Alpha sub and taking her through the ice pack, under the ice, to the east coast of the United States, pursued constantly by Soviet fast attack submarines who want to get it back or else sink it. So it's an exciting book that carries you on the edge of your seat from the first page to the last.
Now, did you always want to be a writer, even like back in your younger days when you're doing the adventure stuff and being in the military? was that always there in the back of your mind about eventually one day writing these kind of books, or is this something that came along later?
When I was a teenager, I wrote a perfectly awful short story that I sent to John W. Campbell Jr. And at that time, astounding science fiction, science fact and fiction. It hadn't changed its name to Analog yet. And he wrote me a personal letter back and said, you know, this probably isn't good enough for what we need, but keep it up, kid. You got some talent.
Well, that's a good thing to hear.
Yeah.
Over on Twitter, Verwayne Greenho, he says, I have two or three of Robert's stories. I like your marketing effort. Can you talk about that? So what are your marketing efforts?
Well, I work on LinkedIn and Twitter and Facebook and just a little bit on Instagram. I'm not fully comfortable with Instagram yet. I haven't really realized its potential, but I belong to several groups, writers groups and readers groups, and I put out occasional blurbs on this book or that book. One of the things I just did last week was to offer Slingshot, the first book in the Starchild trilogy, for free for 5 days, with the idea that if people got it for free and they read it and liked it, then they just might buy book two and book three. And it's been happening. Book two and book three are being purchased now. There had been a lull in the sales of those books before that, so the strategy seems to be working.
Okay, yeah, that offering them for free, that's like at the top of the show we talked about Stephen offering one of his books, and that seems to stir up the interest of readers. I may have to try something like that myself.
So, Robert, are you thinking beyond Operation Arctic Sting? You get some ideas for that fourth book?
Yeah, the next book will be called Operation Whiteout, and it takes place in Antarctic waters and on the continent itself. And it's the Tuthis and the Saturation Dive Team are sent into the southern waters to lay two SOSUS arrays that will complete two sets of three SOSUS arrays looking northward in the Pacific and the Atlantic to track Soviet submarine and surface ship activity. And while they're down there, they discover an underwater operation put on by the Taiwanese to extract oil from a huge oil reservoir underneath the ice pack. And it becomes very involved. The Taiwan at the time that this takes place, which is the Cold War period, the 1980s, Taiwan was struggling to maintain its identity. The United States was playing political games and eventually recognized Red China as the China and dropped the Taiwan as China from the Security Council. The Koreans were getting involved. And it was becoming really dicey, and all of these elements come into play as Mac and his people try to bring back from the Antarctic a submarine tanker filled with oil to supplement the dire need for oil that Taiwan had.
Oh, totally interesting.
Yeah, and for listeners who may not understand, what are these SOSUS arrays of which you speak?
When a ship in the water beyond the 50-fathom curve, beyond 300 feet, produces sound, whether it's on the surface or whether it's below the surface, the water is sufficiently deep that as you go further down, it compresses and sound starts going straight down, but then it curves up and eventually reaches the surface, so that if you have a ship on the surface, 12 miles distant, there's a ring of sound produced by the ship, and then another 12 miles beyond that is another ring of sound, and each of these rings of sound gets wider and wider so that eventually the entire ocean surface is insonified, is filled with sound from the ship. Only problem is the sound is way, way, way below ambient noise level, so it's not something you can just listen to. And during the Cold War, we figured out a way, Bell Labs, working with the Navy, figured out a way to extract these sounds from the background noise, and we placed arrays around the oceans looking in the areas where Soviet submarines might be coming through. We were able to, by using, it would take three arrays, all three of them, identifying the sound source, they could pinpoint within a fairly small area where it was, so that we were able to keep track of virtually every Soviet submarine everywhere, except down in the Southern Oceans, and this is why it became necessary for the Tuthis and to lay the arrays down there so that we could cover that part of the world as well.
All right.
We're hearing back from our listeners that they like to hear our authors read samples. If we put you on the spot, can we get you to read a brief sample out of Operation Arctic Sting?
Sure. Yeah, I pulled one up here. It's about 900 words. Take a couple minutes to read through.
Okay.
Bear in mind, you who are listening, bear in mind that some of the names and some of the things are kind of off the wall because you haven't got the background that preceded this, okay?
Right.
So this is Mac telling the story. We were in the middle of Spook's watch as we readied for charging ops. We hung out while Tuthis pushed her sail through the ice for a sat fix. Barry had the watch over there, and he was good at it. He took 20 minutes for the entire operation. When he finished, he submerged and moved Tuthis 100 feet away from the broken ice. My head is due south, Barry told us over the secure Gertrude. I'm 300 feet off your starboard beam up against the canopy. It's a bit jumbled, but nothing extends down more than 10 or 12 feet. You should have no problem coming alongside. And Spook didn't. In less than a half hour, we were ready to receive Trons. It wasn't like we hadn't done it before. With our lights ablaze on our monitors, we watched the divers approach our starboard side with a shore power cable, two dragging the cable and one remaining aft and above as lookout. The basketball surveyed the entire scene. Pure routine. Because we were not connected to the Diver Talk network, we could not hear what happened next. Only watch in horror. Out of nowhere, a large, white body flashed from above behind the lookout, who we learned later was Ski. Ski must have sensed water movement behind him because he turned to confront the largest polar bear I ever saw. A male, nearly 10 feet long and massing just under 1,000 pounds. We determined those numbers later, but at the moment, it was just one damn big bear, almost certainly mistaking Ski for a seal. Ski propelled himself backward with furious fin strokes and fired a dart into the bear's massive chest. The creature didn't seem to notice it. An excellent swimmer, the bear caught up with Ski in moments and grabbed his right fin and foot in its mouth. Ski shot off another dart, this time directly into the bear's left eye. The bear opened its jaw, releasing Ski's foot. The fin was gone, and we could see blood oozing through Ski's punctured hot water suit, spreading like a black cloud through the icy water. The bear pulled back, swiped at its left eye several times with both enormous paws, and then lunged back at Ski, who was doing his best to open up space between himself and the giant creature. The other two divers, Harry and Whitey, we learned later, approached the bear from either side, trying to distract it so Ski could swim to safety. Without a moment's hesitation, the bear launched toward Harry, who launched a dart and dropped rapidly down under Lyre. Instead of heading for safety, Ski turned to confront the bear as it focused its attention on Whitey. All of this took place in the eerie pantomime of total silence, except the divers could hear each other through their comms. From my point of view, there seemed little the divers could do except try to save themselves. Ski could have, and Harry was out of immediate danger, but both divers returned to Whitey's predicament. With the loss of its left eye and probably in a lot of pain, the polar bear, normally a remarkable hunter, seemed disoriented, unable to decide to whom to attack first. That was the moment another player joined the fracas. Out of the darkness, a black and white fury, three times the bear's length, slammed into the hapless creature, ripping out its entire stomach with one massive swipe. The orca dragged the carcass away from the divers and then returned, polar bear entrails trailing from its massive jaws. 10,000 pounds of orca gently nudged each diver with its snout, and then darted off to check its prey. Immediately, Harry and Whitey pulled Ski back to the egress lock, where Jimmy commenced treating his mangled foot. Jerry placed Ski, and the three wet divers returned to the task of connecting the shore power cable. As they finished, the orca returned, watching closely but maintaining its distance. Not knowing what the orca would do to the shore power cable, Harry and Whitey remained near the shore power connector on Lyre. The orca stayed nearby for the full 2 hours, except when it returned to the hole in the ice left by Toothless to grab a lungful of air. About halfway through the charge, Jer spotted another polar bear approaching their activity. Before he could raise the alarm, however, the orca charged, and the bear got the hell out of Dodge. When Lyre's battery bank was fully charged, Harry and Whitey disconnected the cable and returned it to the egress lock, closely monitored by the orca. Once the three divers were safely inside the egress lock, the orca swam to the hatch and placed its left eye against the opening, rolling back and forth to take in the entire interior. As the orca departed, the divers noted a bite-sized piece missing from the trailing edge of his dorsal fin, probably the remnants of a long-forgotten encounter with a shark. Ski was unable to say goodbye to his rescuer because he was sedated while Dr. Janice Evis, Toothless's surgeon, carefully reconstructed his mangled foot. Oh, by the way, that was when I suddenly realized that it was December 25, Christmas. I reached into my pocket and fingered Kate's cylinder. What is she doing? I thought. Who's she with? Is she safe? Kate's cylinder was distracting me. I couldn't allow that. Too much rested on my shoulders. I let the cylinder go and pushed it deep into my pocket. I pulled myself together and announced throughout Lyre, Merry Christmas. Bet you never dreamed you'd spend Christmas like this.
And that is Operation Arctic Sting, book three of a Mac McDowell mission series by Robert G. Willescroft. And we are estimating that approximately 2 weeks from now, it should be out there at all the retailers in pre-sale mode. Give you people a couple of weeks to get in there and get your orders before the actual release date. That's a Mac McDowell mission series. And we are getting ready to start working on the audiobook for that. I understand that Trenton Bennett, whose voice you've heard doing these audiobooks and even the commercials for Mr. Willescroft, has got all of his recordings done, and it's time for us to start putting in sound effects, man, and have fun with it, too.
Yes, indeed.
Robert, it's been a blast talking to you again, and as always. And, you know, obviously, you've got a lot to offer your fans. Some people might be more into the adventure, some more into the sci-fi. But whatever they're interested in, how do people find you? Where are you out there? What are your handles?
The easiest way to find me is to go to my book website, robertwillescroft.com. Of course, you can also find me on the Fresh Ink Group website. My Twitter handle is at RG Willescroft. You can find me on LinkedIn, and you can find me on Facebook.
Great. And, of course, anytime somebody wants to get a hold of Robert and send him a comment, ask a question or whatever, and can't get a hold of him any other way, we have a contact form at the Fresh Ink Group website, or if you go to Robert's page right in the freshinkgroup.com website, there's a button under his picture that says contact Robert, and you can send him an email.
I will answer every email I get unless I get totally overwhelmed, but I'll do my best to answer everything I get.
Great.
Okay, now, listeners, and if you want to keep up with what's going on with this program, The Voice of Indy, we are on every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and you can find out who's going to be on the show and get all that information by subscribing to our newsletter. Just go to the freshinkgroup.com website. On the homepage there, scroll down to the bottom, and there's where you can sign up for the newsletter so you don't miss out on who our guests will be. And so next week, who's going to be our guest, Stephen?
Next week, we have John W. Howell, a best-selling thriller author based in Texas. And then the week after that, on the 26th, we have motivational speaker and author Carlisle Toms going to be on. And then here's an interesting note for you Willescroft fans. The week after that, on June 2nd, our guest is going to be Trenton Bennett, the voice actor who's been doing the audiobooks and our commercials for Robert G. Willescroft's books. And Trenton's going to talk about the whole production process, how people can get into doing their own audiobooks, either through ACX, where they do the shared program, or doing the kind of thing like Fresh Ink Group does, where we just make them and let the author own their own copies of them. Trenton does all these different things, and he knows all about it, and he's even been doing some seminars for ACX, so he's ready to answer all of your questions about getting into the audiobook business. And then who we got after that, Vadim?
And on June 9th, we have pastor and author Lanny Richmond. Lanny's written a couple of spiritually inclined books. Very interesting. Side note, he also happens to be my uncle. And then on June 16th, we have Jan Sykes, who is a musician, author, blogger, and a longtime friend of both Stephen and myself. And we are going to have her on June 16th, and we're really looking forward to that.
Yeah, we go way back with Jan. She's a sweetheart. So remember, everybody, get out there and follow us on social media. We've got Facebook pages. We've got we're on Twitter. We're on LinkedIn. We're on Instagram, both as individual authors and as Fresh Ink Group. And follow us, spread the word, help us get the word out about these podcasts. And we look forward to hearing from you either on Twitter or on the phone next week when we talk to John W. Howell.
And get over to YouTube and make sure you subscribe to our channel. Hit that like button. Get over to Spotify and click the follow on there. And we will see you again next week, everybody. And once again, thank you, Robert, for taking time out on your Wednesday to join us.
Thank you, Robert.
It has been my pleasure. I really enjoyed this.
Great.
Okay. Goodbye, everybody.
You've been a part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.